Hi guys, it's Amber here and welcome back to This May Get Hairy. This is episode 2 and in this episode I chat to the beautiful Talia Heffernan. Talia is one of the most sought after models in Ireland and has been for the past 15 years or so. She's also worked internationally in London, Paris, Germany, New York, which we chat about in the podcast. And she really is such a beautiful woman on the outside, of course, but also on the inside. I know that's a cliche to say, but she really, really is. And she just shines so bright. And I've known Talia for, a good few years now from my modelling days back in Dublin. And we also grew up in Dublin, kind of in similar circles around the same time. And I remember seeing Talia for the first time and I genuinely thought that she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in my life. It was almost like she was otherworldly when I first saw her. And I don't really get to chat to Talia much now. You know, it's kind of every now and then over Instagram, we kind of stay in each other's life that way. So it was just fantastic to be able to sit down with her properly and just be able to hear her story firsthand. So it was like you guys get to listen to a really good catch up basically that I had with Talia. We chat about Talia's own hair journey with her curly, beautiful hair. We learn about some of her disaster hair stories and also what I found really interesting, how important hair is in a model's career. I don't think I ever really fully understood just how important it is. And also we speak about Talia's general mental health and her confidence and that whole evolution as well. Everyone, the beautiful Talia Heffernan. Thank you for taking the time out of, I know, your busy schedule, because I know you've just moved back to New York. You've just said 3 weeks ago, which is mad. And seeing as you're one of the most sought after models in Ireland, I know this because we share the same agent. I know you're back to back. So I just really appreciate you for taking the time to chat to me. And I decided to do this podcast a little while ago and I was thinking about who I wanted on, and you were one of the first names to come into my mind for a couple of reasons. Selfishly, I kind of just wanted to chat up, to catch up and have the chat. But also, we knew each other as teenagers when I was modeling back in Dublin, and I've kind of just been following your life really from the periphery, you know, through the Instagram lens and interviews and articles that you've done. And seeing that evolution and that journey that you've been on is really just been amazing to watch. And also thinking about how hair perhaps has had a part of that evolution as well, because I think it does way more than we think. And I remember always being obsessed with your curly hair, but always knowing that perhaps it wasn't something that you've always loved. And I'm hoping you might be able to take us back to baby T, baby Talia, teenage Talia back in Dublin, and kind of exploring, you know, what was your relationship like with yourself and also with your hair at that time?
Oh, Amber, to start, thank you so much. What a gorgeous intro. You're such a dose, and I'm so, so happy to be here. I think this podcast is such a brilliant idea. And we spoke briefly before we started recording about how much your hair gives or takes your confidence away, depending on how you're feeling that day, depending on how it's acting, depending on so many different circumstances. And you kind of mentioned it briefly there. You love my curls, and people have always loved my curls, but I battled these for the majority of my teenage years. And you always want what you can't have. I always wanted straight hair or perfectly blow-dried hair, and I couldn't get it. It's such an interesting relationship. And as you evolve and grow and change, you start to change your relationship with your hair. And I just think this podcast is such a great, great idea. And I cannot wait to hear all of your guests and what their experiences are. It's mega.
And, you know, we both kind of grew up at a time, I know you're a little bit younger than me, but we both grew up in Ireland, middle class, Dublin, and I guess the kind of stereotype of beauty at that time was that kind of straight, long, blonde hair, makeup, certain kind of clothing. Did you feel growing up that having curly hair was not fitting into that stereotype? And because I remember you always blowing out your hair, and I'm always being like, why is she doing that? I'm obsessed with her hair. But I guess we all do it at that time when we're teenagers, right? All we're wanting to do is just trying to fit in.
Fit in, exactly. And I never fit in. I always wish I was, like, I have so many vivid memories of being a teenager and looking in the mirror and just being like, why do you have to be so different? Why do you have to look this way? And I remember going out and, like, you know, drinking in fields and stuff, and I'd be like, it's raining, what am I going to do? I'm going to look like a different person by the end of the night. And all of these anxieties and fears surrounding my hair and just generally what I look like. Like, we're very similar shapes in that we were both very tall and very skinny from a very young age. And to fit into the narrative that you were speaking about earlier, this kind of ideal woman in Ireland or girl in Ireland, which is the long blonde straight hair and the big boobs and
the petite, always really small, like pocket size.
Pocket size, and, you know, looks 30 but they're only 12, that whole job. And we, both of us, never fit into that mold. And I tried so hard and it just never really worked out for me. And I guess I put a lot of weight into my curls. I'd blame on my curls for that. So I have such guilt surrounding that now as well, because now I love my hair and I'm starting to really embrace my curls. And I mean, they're a journey and they take a lot of work, but it's something that I have that no one else does. Like, every curl is different. Every hair is different. Everyone's hairs are different. But you start to embrace certain things. And I mean, like you said, I used to blow it out all the time. I used to live with a GHD plugged in. And when I think about straightening my hair now, I grimace. Like, I wince when I go into on set and they're going, a straight hair. I actually, my whole body flinches going, oh, I don't have to do this again. I don't have to go through it.
Because I'm sure when you are straightening your hair, you're using those heat products on the hair all the time, especially around that time when you were doing it back to back. I'm sure your hair suffered from that. I'm sure you saw the suffering of your hair and perhaps it isn't half as healthy as it was now. Did you really see that damage from straightening it for all those years?
I mean, it's amazing. I don't know if it's a thing that you, when you're younger, your hair is just better. But when I was 15, 16, 17, and I started modeling, I straightened my hair out all the time. People didn't even know I had curly hair, except for people like you know, people who were in the industry. And I never really, I don't think it took a huge amount of damage, only that I wasn't dying it at the same time.
Okay.
So I was, it was my natural color. I was in school. I also would only kind of wash my hair once a week because of the amount of effort. You knew, like, it was down to my bum.
Yeah.
And it was so full. So it's just so much effort to do it all the time. But then when I was leaving sixth year, I went and put bleach in my hair and went blonde. And that was the first time I really noticed, okay, there is something really wrong here. Like, when I'm bleaching and then straightening my hair, I could really see the damage. And then now, as I've gotten older, obviously with my job and being on set all the time and constantly having different colors put in or different hairstyles, like, not just straightening, but the pulling, you know, tight buns, tight ponytails, hats, wigs, pieces, you know, that pull on your hair. Mm-hmm. My hair is just slowly starting to get worse and worse. And the only time I managed to kind of grab it back was during lockdown. So we had our 2-year hiatus. And up to that point, my hair had been kind of just below shoulder length, which it's never been. Like, this is the shortest my hair has been in a long, long time. I've always had long hair, but it just grew like wildfire during lockdown. And it was so healthy. And my curls came back and I was really working on them. And yeah, I just remember during lockdown being like, oh my gosh, my job really does affect my hair. And the confidence I got when my hair was growing back was huge. And then now I'm back working again. I'm back in the cycle and I try so hard to keep on top of things, but it can kind of feel impossible sometimes.
I guess that can be probably really frustrating when you don't have the choice, when you really just want to protect your hair, but you can't. That must be so incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, there's also ways around that. I mean, I'm very lucky on set here. I know most hairstylists and I kind of go in and I'm like, guys, please go easy, you know, or I'll usually have like heat protectants in my bag or serums or oils and stuff that I will use. And actually, when I was in New York, there was very few times my hair wasn't curly. They loved my natural pattern, which was really odd for me and new, because generally I find here within the European market, they go off of trends. They, like, you walk in as a blank canvas, similar to what you were saying, and they kind of turn you into what they want. Whereas in America, it really felt like they took you as who you were and then just enhanced what you had naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a really beautiful experience. But I say that, and then on the flip side of the coin, I went bleach blonde in a day when I was in America. So, I mean, you know, it was a whole journey. But I think America really taught me to love my curls. The Americans really taught me to love my curls. You know, they kind of really solidified that this is a really interesting special trait and special thing that I have, and that I should lean into it as opposed to literally straighten it out of me.
And in terms of like your family, does anyone else have curly hair? Because I know from having curly wigs, the difference in maintenance and having to look after those curly wigs in comparison to the straight wigs, like, it is a different ball game. And my husband Ben has curly hair as well, and all his sisters do too. So I know what needs to go into making those curls look beautiful, because if you're going in and combing those now, they're going to frizz and fluff and you're going to become looking like just a frizz ball. So I 100% know that struggle. So where does that hair come from? Did anyone teach you how to look after your hair from the beginning? Was someone there to kind of guide you through that? Because again, it's so different.
It is so different. And it's funny, I'm the youngest of three girls, as you know. My two older sisters both have gorgeous, shiny, straight hair with maybe a tiny little kink. When they wash their hair and they blow dry it, just loosely blow dry it, I'm like, you have no idea. That would take me 4 hours and it would last me 6 minutes. My parents, though, both have curly hair. So my mom has really curly hair, but she's always straightened it. And my dad had long hair when I was younger, and he had also got a wave in it as well. So I guess the amalgamation of those two created me. And then my sisters just got the other genes. I don't know. Yeah, so fair. I didn't necessarily have, my family didn't really know what to do with me and my curls. But I do remember I've always had long, long, long hair. And I would go into hair salons. There was one amazing stylist, Jackie Faye. She has been cutting my, doing my mom's hair for years. And she used to do my hair when I was younger. And I'd walk into the salon and I'd sit in the chair and there'd be like four or five hairstylists would just stand and watch Jackie working with my hair because they just couldn't believe it. It was just so long, so thick. But my hair's actually, funnily enough, it's not thick. It's very fine. I just have loads of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so curly. Like, I remember breaking hair brushes. The girl's trying to go get through my hair and brushes breaking. And having two or three hairstylists having to blow out my hair because it was just so much. I would go in with curly hair and get a haircut and you'd have to cut into it a specific way so that you wouldn't ruin the curl pattern. And all I wanted was them to blow it straight afterwards. And like, I would hang on to that blow dry for dear life. I did not want my curls back. And it's so sad now because when I look back at pictures when my hair was curly, I wasn't using really products because I didn't know what to do. And my curls were so gorgeous. And now I've used like 75 different products. And it's like a 45 minute routine before I even dry it to get even close to what they used to be like.
You know, it's not really, it's probably not really our fault that we don't, well, there's two things. Us as women don't like what we have. We always want what we don't have. But I also do find with curly hair generally, there is this kind of narrative around women with curly hair. You know, they're meant to be unruly, unkept, untamed. And I always think of famously, you know, in Sex and the City with Carrie Bradshaw versus Natasha Biggs, then chosen wife, and how that comparison was always such a huge comparison between he's gone for the, you know, in inverted commas, basic bitch, and here I am kind of complicated with my curly hair. So that narrative still exists and it's still out there for sure. And did you ever find that you've been, you know, so honest and so gorgeous, like I said at the beginning, about speaking about your mental health throughout the years? Lots of women who I've spoken to, when they've gone through dips in their mental health, that they've kind of seen that effect in their hair. Perhaps it might be hair thinning, hair loss, or even hair having lack of shine and lack of luster. Did you ever find that correlation between your health and your hair ever?
All the time. It's amazing to me. And I always say, when I speak about mental health and anxieties and all these feelings, and I have done, like you said, quite often, I feel it in my body before I feel it in my mind,
yeah,
quite often. And I really do believe, like, when you think about your hair, like, the ends of our hair have been with us for how many years? And memories are stored in your hair and your body. So it's kind of beautiful to think, like, what we hold onto on our head, what we see in our body has always been there. Like, our cells kind of regenerate stuff, but like, this has been around as long as I have.
Yeah.
And it's only inevitable that it's going to, when you start to feel a certain way, it's going to come out in other things. Like, I've always said, when my mind starts to go, everything starts to go. I get thinning around my, kind of my hairline. The shine is a real thing. I lose shine. I lose texture. My curls won't be the same. It'll be frizzier, drier. My mind, my body will, like, I'll feel weight in certain areas, or, you know, changes in hormones. And it all is so interconnected. And it's so important that we remember that.
Yeah. And
I always say
the
mind and body are actually one. They're not two separate things. And like, the health of your mind and the health of your body are so important. And I think it's really important to start to notice the signs like that. Like, I know I have so many friends, and you start to think about stress and immediately they're like, yeah, my hair is starting to shed. Or in the shower, I'm starting to notice that, you know, my drains are full of hair and I don't understand what's going on. And I'm like, how's work?
Yeah.
Or, you know,
how are you?
How's that guy that you're texting? Yeah, yeah, yeah. How really are you? And then it starts to come out. It's like, oh, I see. There's almost always a correlation. And especially when I was in New York, I went over, and within the first 3 weeks, my agency were like, we want you to go blonde. I was like, sure, no problem. We've all been there, Amber, you know, as a model, it's like,
they just throw something at you, right? They just throw something at you, and you feel like you have to do it because you feel like if you don't do it, someone else will just take your place and do that too. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. And you put so much trust into your agents because at the end of the day, it's their, you know, when you move into a new city, you're moving into a new market. You know, the New York market's so different to London, to Germany, to Dublin, to the markets that I know. So when your agent says, we think you're more marketable as a blonde, you're just like, sure, no problem. So I've gone over full virgin hair, no color, down all the way down to my waist, super healthy, the healthier it has been because we've kind of just come out of lockdown. So again, I look back at it now and I'm like, oh my God, you don't realize what you have in the moment. So within the first 3 weeks, we booked in and I went into the hair salon and I didn't realize what color we were going. It was just kind of like, we're going blonder. It sent me a reference of Rosie Huntington Whiteley. And I was like, gorgeous. It'll be lovely. But that was kind of the only info I got. And I assumed the hairdresser had the same info, which he did. 5 hours later, I walk out of the hair salon, white blonde, bleached. It was like 0 to 200 in 4 hours. And it was so, I remember it was so brittle after the bleaching that I actually left the salon with wet hair. He was like, I don't want to put heat or apply pressure from a hairdryer on it. So I was like, sure, no problem. So walking the streets of New York and I kept catching glimpses of myself in mirrors or in like reflections of buses that drove past. And obviously as I'm walking, my hair is drying and it's just getting more shocking each time I catch myself in the reflection. And I loved it. Like I was just like, this is absolutely mad. And I remember going into H&M near Union Square and I walked in and I went to get like socks or something really mundane. And on the way to the till, there was a mirror and I actually went, because my hair had finally dried at this point. And it was just so shocking. Like I had no curl. It was just kind of blown. My whole forehead was blown.
And you said you liked it? How did you feel about it?
It's just so shocking. It was like somebody put a mask on me. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was looking going, is that me? It is me, but it doesn't look like me. But I did love it. Like I thought it was really interesting. And then I went home and I put a load of K18 in it and was like, let's hope that this works. I was like, I could feel it's just the texture changed so much. And then I lived that for a little bit and I loved it, but I could definitely feel the damage in the hair. And then, so I got an email from the agency and they said, we love your hair. We love what it looks like, but we just think coming into, you know, autumn better if it was a little bit more tone. I was like, absolutely. So I went back to a hairdresser and I don't know who didn't get the brief, but I walked out of that hairdresser three hours later, bawling, crying. Like, it looks like a cheap Halloween wig. Whatever way it had been done, I think there might have just been a lack of communication or a miscommunication. But again, it was no one's fault. It was just one of those things that happened. And it was like, when I say cheap Halloween wig, it's actually hilarious. It doesn't even look like a real head of hair.
It must be so hard, especially when you say that you go and you're putting your trust in your agent, you're going in again to do something again, what they wanted, it comes out, it's not right. And at the end of the day, it's your hair. It's not a wig. It's not something you're placing on your head. It's your hair that then now needs to go through a whole new wave of color correction to try and fix that, when that is so distressing, when you're just wanting to be there and be there for what you're there for, which is to be there to work. Seriously, can't be good for your mental health during that time too, when you're just trying to settle, then you have all these unsettling things happen.
And it's so funny when you actually said to me, will you come on the podcast to talk about your hair? I was like, people have no idea the last year how much my hair journey has impacted my life. Like it really changed everything. You can't model when your hair isn't right. You can't model when your skin isn't right. You know, people won't, especially in a market like New York, you are facing the most incredible people in your job every single day. Like in terms of competition, there's nowhere on earth like it. So when you're walking in with any sort of my hair not being great or something else not being great, you're the level of disadvantage is so much higher there because there's just so much competition. So with the blonde hair, as much as I loved it, the minute my roots started to come through, we had to fix it. Then we got the tonal and then that kind of went, you know, askew. But during this whole time, I couldn't work. So every day waiting for the appointments to come through or whatever might happen, I wasn't working. And that put so much stress on me because New York is so expensive. New York is so difficult. And it was just such a journey of sitting, waiting to figure out what the next move for my hair was going to be.
That must have been so hard. How did you find, what tools did you bring into your life at that time to kind of keep a steady head and to kind of keep your mental health at ease? And what things did you do to kind of help with that? Because I can imagine how debilitating that must have felt and being in that kind of limbo period. I know how hellish that can be.
Yeah, I mean, the gym was great for me. A lot of walking, a lot of just trying to get fresh air and trying to get out of the apartment. Because again, when you're on an O-1 visa, an artist visa, you can't do anything but what you're allowed to do, like what your visa tells you you can do. So I couldn't go and work and do anything else. So I actually ended up getting a keyboard to play piano. I try to paint, but it's so funny. Like, I'm very creative and I like creating things. I love cooking. I love drawing. I love making music. But when your head, it's similar to your kind of what we were saying earlier, your mind and body. When my head starts to go, my creative streak just ends. Like, I can't create. I can't. It's almost like this, I get stuck in a rut. And I remember just calling my mom and my sisters, and I just balls down the phone, and they just didn't know what to do. And it's really hard for people who aren't with you. You know, my family were back in Dublin and they just didn't know what to do. And it's a very difficult situation. I think modeling in general is a very hard industry to survive in a new city. And then, like I said, have any disadvantages on top of that were just very debilitating. And this was kind of coming up to Christmas. So I got my color correction done in November and then came home for Christmas. And when I came home for Christmas, I went to my hairdresser here. He did a little bit more color correction. But I mean, the amount of money I ended up spending on all of this without making anything back, really, because I couldn't work, was also debilitating. And I then had to go back after Christmas in January. And thankfully, my hairdresser here in Dublin is incredible. And she kind of set me up so that when my hair started to grow out, it wouldn't be like a solid root. And I started getting more work then, thankfully, in New York. But at this point, I think I'd lost like 7 inches of hair through the whole thing. And I had to go to an amazing girl here in Dublin called Gabriella. She's the curl maven. She specializes in curly hair. And she had to teach me how basically to reintroduce my hair to its curls again, because it had been so blown out that my curl pattern was so gone. And I had to spend so much money and time on different shampoos, different conditioners. You know, I have to wash my hair differently now. I have to use different techniques that I'd never learned before. And I am slowly starting to see my hair get back, but like, it's such an arduous journey. And it's like, you know, when people go to the gym and they expect to lose the weight so quickly, it's the same with hair. It takes months. Like, it's been a year now since, I think it'll be about this time last year that I had the last color correction done. And only now am I starting to be happy with my color and my hair again.
And after that whole experience, which seems like a little bit of a shit show, I'm sure you found yourself, found different parts of yourself. New York probably had so much fun, made lots of friends and had so many amazing life experiences, I'm sure, and probably grew in so many ways. But your relationship towards modeling and the modeling industry, where does your heart lie now? And also maybe it'd be interesting to speak on the shift that you've kind of felt from when you've kind of started modeling to now, the change that you've seen and how you feel about it as well.
It's so funny. Like, New York was, it feels like a fever dream in so many ways. Like, I was there for just over a year. And like you said, like I did love it. Like, it was such an amazing experience. And I had incredible agents who were so kind to me during the process, because, again, everyone felt helpless. Like, they didn't know how to fix this. And they were like, we really want to send you to clients, but we just don't know how to go about it when your hair looks like this, whatever. And they did everything they could. They sent me, you know, I ended up going to one of my manager's own hairdressers for the color correction and stuff. And they were amazing about it. But it was just circumstantially, like you said, a bit of a shit show. And it just turned out to be really not what I was expecting, not what they were expecting. And I mean, everyone was kind of a bit disappointed and upset about the whole thing. But living through it was so, I don't even know how to describe it. It just, you have to tap into parts of yourself that you've never met to survive and to just keep going. And it's kind of one of those things, since I've come back to Dublin, I loved New York, and I actually have a new agency out there who really want me to come back. And there's such a gorgeous energy. It's all family run and they're such nice people. But it's going to take a lot for me to tap back into that side of myself, because similar to what we were talking about, it takes a year for my hair to get to what this point is. It's going to take me a while to heal from not just the hair stuff that happened in New York, but a lot of things. Yeah. And that's why I'm home to kind of recover a little bit and kind of like you said, figure out what my relationship is with my job and where I want to go next. I've always been the person who kept working, always worked from 14, 15 when I first signed. I was in school, I was working. Then I was traveling, I was working. Then I was doing other things. I was doing TV stuff and I was working. And New York was like COVID again, kind of I had to hit the brakes because I couldn't do it anymore, circumstantially. And now that I'm home, I'm kind of, it's the first time I'm allowing myself to hit the brakes for me to figure out what it is that I want to do, because it's tough. It's a tough industry, and it's done a lot to me in a lot of positive ways. And I've done amazing things, and I've met incredible people, and I've traveled the world, and I do love the experiences I've gotten out of it. But I also sometimes have to remember to accept the damages it's done too. Yeah. And I'm in a very reflective period right now. And it's really interesting. It is really interesting, because sometimes it takes moments like this where someone asks the question that you have to force yourself to remember and then reflect. And then there's other times I'll be sitting, you know, at home or going to a job here in Dublin, which feels like my safe space. Like, Dublin is very much my comfort zone, and I know everyone here, and the industry is so safe. But it's sometimes certain things will, you know, trigger some memory or something, and you go, I know you still need to work on that one. But it has changed a lot since I've been a teenager, and you're the same. You remembered the industry here, and you did London, and you did Germany. You've done pretty much the same things I've done. And the industry has definitely changed, but I always do say there's no smoke without fire when it comes to modeling. It's definitely not like they say on America's Next Top Model. Like, you're not always in plunge pools, or you're not always, you know, being forced to run next to a cheetah or whatever else they make people do. But there is always, you know, no smoke without fire. There's always a little bit of something going on in the background, and it just is what it is. We chose this industry.
I know.
Yeah, it's an ongoing battle, but it's so weird. I still love it. Still love doing it.
It really is a double-edged sword, you know, modeling, especially for me, and I'm sure for you, it gives you so much confidence. You know, really did for me when I was losing my hair. I had that sense of like, oh, well, they still want to take my picture, so I must still be pretty. You know, it still gave me, in a fucked up way, self-confidence in a way, but then also in turn, then it kind of puts so much emphasis on how you look, and that for our mental health, obviously, we know isn't great. So I really am just so impressed with you as a young woman, and just seeing that the journey you've been on. I honestly think you're just incredible, and I'm so proud of you. I know, but I just am. I think you're just wonderful, and you're so cool, and I think what you're doing is so amazing. And I know whatever you decide to do, if it's in the modeling industry, if it's not, I know you're just going to go for it, and it's going to work out for you. I just know it will. And we tend to close. I always like to say, and I think it's nice for women, it's a nice kind of reflective exercise, I guess, in a way. If you were to whisper something into, you know, baby Talia or teenage Talia's ear, you know, what would that be? A little bit of advice that you'd give her.
It's funny. I remember doing an article actually a couple of years ago, and it was to my 16-year-old self. And it's mad the emotions you feel when someone asks you that question, isn't it? Like, I'm sure when the first time you had to do that, you're just like, it kind of shocks me. And I actually have, in my new house, I have a mirror there, and I have a picture of myself as a kid. And every morning when I look in the mirror, I look first at myself as a child and then at me, and I go, whatever you say next, you're speaking to that version of you as well. You know, you're not just speaking to this adult version who has flaws and difficulties and he might be in a bad mood. Whatever you're saying, you're also saying to her. You're saying to this child. You'd never speak to any child like that. This too shall pass is probably the most prominent statement I've ever heard from me. Like, it's, my mom always said it to me as a kid. She always says it to my sisters. It's kind of a thing that we've always had in our family. And it just applies to everything.
Yeah.
You know, this too shall pass. If you're in a bad mood, this too shall pass. If something happens to you that in a day that could knock you for six or could have a domino effect, this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. Things will always pass. Good things will pass. You know, you get a promotion, or you get this job offer, or something amazing happens. This too shall pass. You know, it puts everything into perspective, and it kind of helps me keep a level head when I guess it feels like the ground underneath me is a little bit uneven. And I would love to be able to, as myself, as an adult myself, who's still living and thriving and surviving, tell my 16-year-old self, my younger self, this too shall pass. Coming from yourself, I think, is such an important message, because other people saying it to you is their journey. But if you could say it to yourself and say it to yourself more often, and I mean, you could say it to yourself now. I'm going to say it to myself now more often because of this. Everything to this point, you've done hard things. We've all done hard things. So the hard things to come will only be easier because of the hard things we've gone through in the past, and this too shall pass. That's, I guess, probably what I would say to myself.
That's beautiful. It's so nice. Thank you so much, Talia Heffernan, for coming on this Make It Harry. You are an angel. An angel, like your middle name. I actually heard that story just recently. I was watching some videos of you, and you were doing some beautiful speaking on fertility, and you were telling that fertility story with your mom, and you spoke about Angel, and I thought that was really gorgeous. So thank you, and hopefully I'll see you in London in the wig shop soon. We can have some fun trying on some wigs.
I can't wait. And I just want to say before we go, watching your journey from the sidelines from Dublin has been such an emotional roller coaster in every way. Like, we are all so proud of you. I am so proud of you. I've always looked at you like a sister. I've always looked up to you so much in the industry and everything you do. And to see your confidence embracing what the world has given you and seeing what you've done with this is so inspirational to so many people. And I just hope you realize the impact you've made. And just even from me, how much your amazing light shines and how lucky we all are to have you. I think you're just an incredible person and I love what you're doing, and I cannot wait to see what this podcast brings you. Like everything else, it's only going to bring you beauty and joy because it's what you deserve.
I'm tearing up. I've got to go. Thank you, Tali. I love you. Speak to you soon.
Love you too. Bye. Thank you, Amber. Bye, darling.
God, it was so lovely to be able to catch up with Talia. She really is such a gem. And if you guys like this episode, then please do hit the follow button or subscribe. And if you yourself have any hair tales, hair stories, want some hair advice, or just want to say hello, then please do email us at thismaygethairy@gmail.com. We can't wait to hear from you guys. See you later. Bye.